TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
And welcome to a special edition of Raised by Wolves, Zolgad Manny Hill. And we are here because, of course, the Wolves are going to introduce new president of basketball operations, Gerson Rosas, this morning at Target Center. In fact, we are looking at this right now as I'm watching this on television, waiting for the press conference to begin. Gerson has not yet made his way to the podium. I would imagine he'll be going up there. Manny Hill with Ethan Kasson, the president of the Timberwolves, and also owner Glenn Taylor. But this is the news that came out, what, was it last Wednesday or Thursday that this story broke that Gerson Rosas,
Wednesday, yeah,
who was had spent, I found it. It's not 16 years, which I thought it was originally. It's not 18 years, but 17 years in the Houston Rockets front office in various capacities would be the new president of basketball operations for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, and there was a brief moment, I think 2013 is what Danny told me, that he was the GM of the Dallas Mavericks for basically like 3 months. And then apparently he wasn't sure about the role that he was actually going to have there, or he wasn't sure like how much power or roster control he was actually going to have. And then he ended up leaving and going back to the Houston Rockets. And so here we are, fast forward about six years after that. Here we go.
Let's hope for the Wolves' sake and Gerson. And by the way, the correct pronunciation is sent out by the Timberwolves on their press release on Friday. Is phonetically uppercase GR, lowercase SIN. So Gerson.
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 Okay. Yeah, I always thought it was Gerson.
So did I.
Yeah.
But let's hope for the Wolves' sake and Gerson's sake that this is far more successful than his stint in Dallas, where he clearly decided that Mark Cuban was not the genius that we find Mark Cuban to be at times and said, I'll see you later. I'm out of here.
Yeah. And I think it's for me, with him going forward now, the most important thing is Glenn Taylor, hands off. Hands off.
Well, and it's,
Let Gerson do his thing.
Yes, I agree. So here's the immediate question. And I don't know if it gets answered completely truthfully at this press conference or what. But what has Gerson been allowed to do, or what will he be allowed to do with two very key employees, right?
Yeah.
Ryan Saunders.
And Scott Layden.
Are you being told he's your coach, or are you being told we'd like you to consider him, but this is your baby to run? And I think Layden's gone eventually. Or he certainly could be. He's GM now. He's being paid well, so he could be kept on in different roles. But the head coach one, to me, becomes the key question, is what has Glenn told Gerson about his ability to pick his coach?
Yeah, there's no question about that, too. And I think, I tend to think this is going to be a situation where Gerson is going to let Ryan have this job for now and sort of evaluate things over the next year or so, however long they give Ryan, you know, if they decide to bring Ryan back on, give him a 2 or 3 year contract and see how things go. And from what we've heard, it sounds like, you know, Gerson is very much analytically driven. He likes analytics, coming from, you know, working in Houston,
yep,
you know, under Daryl Morey for so many years. And from what we've heard as well, that Ryan Saunders is also a guy who embraces analytics and wants to go down that path too. The thing of it is when you take over midseason, you know, replacing a previous coach,
right,
how much of what you want to do can actually be implemented in that short period of time without a training camp, without an off season and that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to see if they do bring Ryan back, if they'll have more of a collective effort in trying to put the right system in place for these guys.
The other factor in this entire equation that really intrigues me too, and the conversations that probably have gone on now in the days that led up to Taylor and Ethan Kasson hiring Gerson as the president of Wolves basketball operations, is the conversations about Cat as well. Because we know that Carl loves Ryan. Mm-hmm. And you know what? In the NBA in 2019, that's important.
A lot of those players love Ryan.
There's some sports, I think football is a sport where you can essentially say, you know what? We know that you love that guy and we just don't care. And the player might be, well, I'm mad. And they say, too bad. I think basketball, if there was to be a list of sports on which it's pretty important if you have a transcendent superstar, how much that star gets to make some internal decisions that in some sports you would say, I would never allow this. Basketball is number one, right? Basketball is the... So if Carl goes to Gerson and he goes to Glenn and says, I love this guy, you can't dismiss that. And I'm sure there's some people saying, oh, who cares? And ordinarily, I might say the same thing. I think in this sport, you can't. This is one. This is the one sport where everything, unfortunately, it's true, but everything that the Wolves do has to be done with the thought of how is this going to keep this superstar player happy?
Yeah, and guys like Karl Anthony Towns do not come around every single year. I mean, when you have an opportunity to get a player of this caliber, this much talent, you've got to do whatever you can to try and keep him happy, maximize his talents and his abilities, and you know, that's how you go forward. And it looks like they've got to start it here. Let's take him out there.
Fox Sports North, Timberwolves.com, and the Timberwolves Facebook page. And for those of you listening on the radio home of the Timberwolves, 830 WCCO, and all across the Timberwolves radio network.
Forget them.
This is an exciting day for the Timberwolves franchise as the Wolves welcome Gerson Rosas as the president of basketball operations. Gerson has spent a significant time around some of the brightest minds in the NBA, and he has built one of the most impressive resumes in basketball. He started his NBA career with the Houston Rockets in 2002, and he spent the last 17 years in the Rockets front office, including the last seven as executive vice president of basketball operations. While with the Rockets, he has teamed with general manager Daryl Morey to build one of the most successful organizations in basketball. Rosas also played a significant role in developing the team's philosophy and their roster, including the acquisitions of James Harden, Chris Paul, and Clint Capella. Gerson is stepping into this role to pursue his vision of building a world-class organization with a sustained winning model. He champions an innovative, player-centric, and family-oriented philosophy that will mesh well with the Timberwolves community. To get our press conference tipped off today, we'll get some words from Timberwolves owner Glenn Taylor, then we'll hear from Timberwolves CEO Ethan Kasson, and then finally we'll hear from Gerson himself. Glenn?
A couple of weeks ago, at the end of our season, I announced that we were going to open up for candidates for being president of basketball operation. Immediately after that, and within about 4 days, I had 30 people give me their names that they were interested in the job. That excited me. These are individuals, many of which I know and have a high respect for. So I knew that we were going to have some outstanding candidates for the selection of this position. We've made our decision. I'm really happy with our decision. And I'm just going to take a couple of words to express why I'm happy, but he can sell himself. I don't need to do that.
Thank you, Glenn.
But what were the words that I was looking for? Teamwork. I wanted someone who could work with the entire staff, not only the players, but the whole organization, somebody who felt that they were part of the team and they knew what really teamwork meant. A hard worker. We got a hard worker here, a person who has demonstrated in the past. Experience. Here's a person who came into the organization as a young man, worked his way up through all the different organizations. So when he talks to different people in our organization, he knows what it's about because he's done that job himself. Integrity. This was based upon not only talking to him, but my conversations with people who have worked with him over a long period of time, what they told me about him. Positive. We have an organization that's going to have a great foundation, but we can be better, and we need a leader who is positive about the future, where we can go. Our ultimate goal, of course, is to win the championship. We're in a tough division with other very outstanding teams, but we have that potential and we need someone to lead us there. Flexibility. We have a person here that has flexibility. No matter what we have today, we can probably make it better, and he's willing to take a chance to do it. So these are just a few of the things that were important to me. We have an opportunity here to take an organization onto a much brighter future. And I think we have selected the leader who can take us there.
Ethan. Thanks, Glenn, and thanks for your support in this process. Welcome. Good morning to all of you. Thanks for being here with us. Media members, our staff, friends, family. This is a special day for the Timberwolves organization. It's the beginning of many great things to come. I'd like to welcome Gerson to our Timberwolves family. And he has his family sitting courtside here, right in front. His wife, Susanna, welcome. Grayson, how are you? And Gigi, did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, welcome to our Timberwolves family, and we're looking forward to having you be part of this incredible journey. I'd like to say a few thank yous before I pass it over. First and foremost, I want to thank the Houston Rockets organization. When we began this process of looking into four candidates that we thought had the potential to take on a position like this, such an important position for us, we reached out to them, and they were not only so complimentary of you, Gerson, but willing to allow us to go down this process with you. And that's a challenging request, considering what the Rockets are doing and working on right now as we speak in the middle of a playoff battle with the Warriors. I want to thank Tillman Fertitta, his son Patrick, the entire ownership group and family, Daryl Morey, their general manager, and Tad Brown, their CEO, again, for the flexibility to allow us to really go deep into this process and get us to this point. We're looking forward to great things ahead, lots that we're going to get into today, but more importantly, one piece at a time, we're going to build something special, and we're thrilled to have you with us.
Thank you, Ethan. Thank you, Glenn. I tell you, I'm very humbled and very grateful to be here today. To start off with, Glenn and Becky, I incredibly appreciate the responsibility to be a steward over basketball operations and to be able to do something with this organization alongside Ethan that you both can be proud of. A vision not only of yourselves but of the Twin Cities and of Minnesota that's important to what we're going to do on the court and off the court. And I've been very blessed. I thank God, and I thank a lot of individuals who are the reason why I'm here today. There's a lot of people that have believed in me, supported me, and guided me up to this point. But I have to start with my president at home, my wife, and our two children, Grayson and Gianna. Couldn't do it without you guys. And also, you know, to the Houston Rockets. I spent a great part of my career with that organization, both growing up as a fan and as an impactful part of what that organization is about. Was fortunate to work with two great owners in Leslie Alexander and Tillman and Patrick and the Fertitta family, but a lot of great basketball people who have formed me, starting with Rudy Tomjanovich, Carol Dawson, Dennis Lindsay, guys like Daryl Morey, and countless coaches that to this day I consider as friends and have formed my philosophy, my beliefs, and my values. But I'm excited to be here. I'm excited at the opportunity that lies ahead. I'm excited to work with these players, with the organization from top to bottom. I was here about a year ago when we were playing the Timberwolves in the playoffs, and I know how exciting that was for the city. I know how impactful that was, and that's what we want to get back to. Thank you.
Gerson, take us through the process a little bit, maybe behind the scenes. What was the interview process like, and what did it mean to you when Glenn offered you the job?
It was very thorough and diligent process. I give Glenn and Ethan a ton of credit. I've been fortunate to have the opportunity to talk to different organizations, talk to different leadership groups and ownership groups. But I'll tell you, these guys, it was a full process. A lot of time with a lot of different individuals. But I enjoyed it, and I appreciated the fact that you were understanding from top to bottom that this organization is going to be united. It's collaborative, and it has a lot of different arms and legs that are going to be able to impact this market. I enjoyed meeting with not only the basketball operations side, but also the corporate side. I enjoyed meeting with Cheryl, with the Lynx, because that's what Minnesota's about. That's what the Twin Cities are about. And when you walk into this type of relationship, you want to make sure inside and out, what those relationships are about.
Glenn, going through this interview process, why did you decide to go down this particular path, and what about Ethan gave you confidence that he could be the man to lead the charge in finding the right person?
Well, first of all, this process that we used this time is not unique for myself. It's a process that I've used in my other businesses and have been successful in doing that, so I decided we probably should use this process here since it's been successful. That being that I want to get as many people involved as I can that I know and I trust. I mean, Ethan and I have worked together for a long time and have a great relationship. So I have brought not only Ethan, but many of our staff in this process. But this process also gave Garrison the chance to meet our staff and to see the culture that we have. And just have found that that has worked in the past and the other businesses. There was no reason it wouldn't work in this case, and it did.
Yeah, Ethan, why was it so important for you to introduce Garrison to and get feedback from other people in the organization? Why was that important?
Yeah, I would just add or echo a couple of the comments Glenn made. You know, in a position like this, it's about, you know, us interviewing them and them interviewing us. You know, we talk about family, we talk about culture, we talk about alignment, we talk about collaboration, and to really get to the heart of those things, it's crucial that it's not just done in a vacuum, that it's not just a 2.5 hour period of time and hope that you got the right person in a process this integrated with a position this important. So for us, it was interfacing with really what came down to about 10 different people throughout the process and being able to get a 360 degree view of who they were, not just as a leader, who they would be, and somebody running our basketball operations department, but equally important, what kind of leader were they going to be inside of our organization, inside of our community. And then the converse was in fact in play, meaning Garrison had the opportunity to interface with these people as well and find out, is this the place I want to be? Is this the place that I want to raise my family? Is this the organization that I want to take to the next level? So it was very collaborative. It was very inclusive. And again, we were really thrilled with the outcome.
Glenn, how did Garrison explain his vision about the team and why should fans be excited about the direction the Timberwolves are now headed?
Well, first of all, he knew our team. He had worked very hard at it and put together a plan and had suggestions. And what I liked about it, that he was positive. He was positive about the players we have, the people we have in place, and what he might help to improve our situation. I like this. He talked about the ability to use analytics to help a team get better. I'm a mathematician. I like that idea. I like all the information that we can put together to make our team better. So he sold me.
And Garrison, maybe in following up on that, when you look at this roster, you got some help right here for you to answer these questions. When you look at this roster and you look at Karl Anthony Towns kind of headlining this roster, what excites you about the basketball side of things and where this team is capable of going?
You know, as I you got some thoughts? As I went through this process and evaluated the opportunity, there's a lot here. You know, there's a foundation in place. This team was a couple of... You got some thoughts? You know, this team a year back is a couple of games back from the third spot in the West. You know, they make the playoffs. This last year was a tough year, but I see an organization top to bottom, roster-wise, staff-wise, there's a lot of value here. The mandate from Glenn is to build an organization that's world-class, and that's going to be our focus. There's a ton of resources in place to do that, and I'm excited. The players here, I think this, what we're going to bring to this organization in terms of strategy, philosophy, and alignment, are going to allow them to be in a position to be successful. And I'm excited. We're going to invest a lot into this group. We believe that we can be a competitive team moving forward.
Ethan, what made Garrison the right choice for this franchise?
Well, he's coming with help. So it was a very efficient decision.
Very efficient decision.
It was, there are a lot of things. I mean, in Garrison, we found somebody who's one of the most dynamic front office executives inside the NBA. We found somebody who has been doing it for 17 plus years in an organization that's seen tremendous amount of success. In Garrison, we saw somebody that not only has been able to pivot to the modern game of the NBA, but his exposure to not just the data and analytics part of it, but the systems, the infrastructure, the personnel. He checked all those boxes. Above and beyond that, throughout the entire process, it was about collaboration, it was around alignment, it was about teamwork, and it was around family. And we just felt all of those things were just so critical to this. Not taking into consideration the exposure he's had with the coaches that he's worked alongside with, the general managers and front office people that he's interfaced with, his role inside of USA Basketball, his relationship with Mike Krzyzewski. The list goes on and on and on. His background in the development league and the success that the Rockets have had with their development team, now G League team. There are a lot of variables. There are a lot of tangibles and intangibles, and it led us to this decision.
All right, we have a couple questions from Wolves fans who submitted them at Timberwolves.com. This one is from Rob in Bloomington, Gerson, who's a 10-year season ticket member. He wants to know, what aspects and philosophies from the Rockets do you hope to apply to the Timberwolves, and what about their winning culture can you bring to Minnesota?
I've been fortunate to be in a very successful period in Houston, and one of the reasons why I felt, and I talked to Ethan and I talked to Glenn about this, why I felt I was the best person for this responsibility is, in Houston 3 years ago, we were in a very similar place. We had a leadership change, and we had to reset our philosophies. We had to reset our environment and our culture. And that experience, in terms of where the game is now for modern approaches, is something that I want to bring here. You know, I want to make it clear my time in Houston was very special, but this is not going to be Houston North. This is going to be about Minnesota, and we're going to build our own identity. We're going to build our own organism. There's special people here. There's special players here. We're going to use some of the same modern approaches, top to bottom. I believe in the balance of basketball and analytics. That marriage goes hand in hand. We don't focus one way or the other. We want to make educated decisions. One thing I'll bring from Houston is we're going to question the norm in everything that we do. I'll say it multiple times, Glenn wants us to have a world-class organization and top to bottom basketball operations. I know Ethan's support, and with the resources, that's what we're going to build here. We want a sustainable model that's going to have success. We want to consistently be a winning team that gets in the playoffs and has the foundation to compete for a championship and to do something here that hasn't been done. And that's done collaboratively with great people and great partners. And that's a process that we're going to apply to this organization and to this market. And it's going to be a very fun process to see that come to life.
Next, we've got a question from Kathy from Farmington. Gerson, what can you tell us about the status of Ryan Saunders as head coach? How quickly do you plan on making a decision on that end and other positions within the front office?
That's one thing that I do want to make the point. I've been in the process where I've been in an organization where there's been change in the middle of the season, the middle of tenure. So I'm very sympathetic to the group here, and it's very important to me. From the day that Glenn gave me the responsibility, we've begun a process to evaluate the organization from top to bottom. And for us, my focus is to find partners throughout all the organization so we can work together. And so I can put them in a position to be successful so they can put us in a position to be successful. The head coaching position is a critical and important part of that. I'm doing my due diligence. I think Ryan and Scott have done a very commendable job considering everything that's happened this season. I look forward now to sitting down and visiting with them and talking about the organization. But that's a major objective that we want to address here sooner rather than later.
And finally, we've got Sarah in Minneapolis who wants to know, how important is it to you being the first Latino to lead an NBA basketball operations department?
It's critically important. It comes with responsibility. The game has blessed me so much. I've been fortunate to you know, I'm an immigrant from Bogota, Colombia. The game has taken me to places that I would have never imagined, whether in the NBA, the G League, winning a gold medal with USA Basketball, Basketball Without Borders. I'm very humbled and very blessed by all those opportunities, and that gives me a responsibility to give back. Being the first Latino head of basketball operations is something that should motivate others. If I can make it, they can make it. And if I can do my part to help and support others the same way I was helped and supported, that's critically important to me. It's a responsibility that I don't take very lightly. Before you move on, though, I've got one thing that it's important to me. I know Minnesota, as I've learned through this process, is a very special place. And for me, this, as I said earlier, this is a family decision. You know, Houston, we're in a great situation, a position to contend for a championship. In order, in this day and time, to make this move, it's a place where I wanted my family to be. And what Minnesota has to offer is what we want to embody. And it's important to me that our values are consistent. Well, we want to create an organization. We want to put a team on the floor that people feel excited about it. It's not as much words as it is actions, and that's going to be our focus. There's going to be tangible change, and this market's going to feel it. And it's important to Glenn, it's important to Becky, it's important to Ethan and the rest of the leadership group here, and that's our vision. But sticking to Minnesota, Sid Hartman, thank you for being here today. It wouldn't be the same if you weren't here.
And with that, we'll conclude the press conference portion of today's event. We'll now have a photo opportunity with Gerson and Ethan and Glenn up here on the stage with the jersey presentation. Following that, Ethan and Gerson and Glenn will have media availability at the setup behind the stage here. Thanks again to everyone for attending today's event, and welcome Gerson Rosas to the Timberwolves.
Right. It's a special edition here on Score North, which you can find, of course, Score North of 1500, scorenorth.com, Score North mobile app, all of those good places. Of the Gerson Rosas introductory press conference, Zolgad and Manny Hill, we will be doing Raised by Wolves until noon when it'll be time for Purple Daily, and then we have Twin Show, of course, at 1 o'clock. By the way, programming note, 1:30 today, Thad Levine, GM of the Twins, is going to join the program to talk about the three-game series against the Yankees. Manny Hill, let's get back to this. All right, some observations. Approach. I don't believe in my time covering sports in this market at an introductory press conference I have ever seen this approach taken. Now, my understanding is that the media who is there is now going to get opportunities off to the side to talk to Gerson Rosas and Glenn Taylor and Ethan Kasson. So they're not being shut out. But it's just very interesting that the entire press conference was done with opening statements. And then, of course, Horton, the play-by-play voice of the Wolves, who does an outstanding job, asked all the questions. And then it got down to, the final three or four questions that came in, I would guess, at some point in time in the past few days, probably not today, from Wolves season ticket holders who might have been or might not have been prompted to ask questions. First observation of that press conference. I think we got it the first time when they tried to give us the visual or talk about family that these are not Tibbs' Wolves. I feel like I've been bludgeoned with it. And listen, Gerson Rosas' kids are very, very cute. They're adorable children. But I think that was about the third attempt to tell us that this is now a family, that these are not the screaming, bellowing Tibbs' foul mouth. I only think about basketball. Glenn Taylor, get out of my office because I'm preparing for the game. Yeah. I think we understood that pretty quickly. He's a family man. That's great. But keep in mind, folks, the key here is, can he put together a team that can win basketball games? I don't care. I don't care if he's the world's best dad. That does not make you a good basketball executive. Being a lifelong bachelor, like Tibbs was, and caring about basketball does not make you a good basketball executive.
Correct.
So really, the questions that are going to be asked off to the side probably become the most important questions, which is, tell us about your basketball acumen, because your kids are great, and it's great you're a family man, and the Star Tribune and Pioneer Press will probably do big stories on your family at some point in time. But Gerson, if you can't win basketball games, ultimately, as we learn with Tibbs, none of it matters, because if Tibbs had come here and won and made great moves, guess what we wouldn't care about? The fact he swore, the fact that he told Glenn, I don't want to give you the game plan because it doesn't matter if you know or not, and the fact that he basically, I think, had like a niece or something, and that was his life, and that was it.
Yeah, and I think the most important questions to ask Gerson Rosas now going forward have to be basketball related now. It's, what are you going to do with Karl Anthony Towns? How are you going to maximize your franchise player? The most important piece of your franchise, the most important piece of this franchise since one Kevin Garnett. All right? The best player in this franchise's history since Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with him to maximize him going forward? Because you've got him on a new five-year contract now. That's a good situation in terms of having that sort of player in place. Now, how do you take his game, which is already at a great level now, how do you take his game to another level?
Yes.
Another question I have is, what are you going to do about Andrew Wiggins? It's a bad contract. We all know it's a bad contract. it's going to be very, it's going to be a contract that's very, very difficult to move and get off of your books.
Yep.
So as long as you're in that situation now, how are you going to maximize Andrew Wiggins? It may be impossible to get him to live up to the contract, but how do you get the most out of him that you possibly can now going forward?
And today, I get it. Today is the introductory. Everybody feels sure, good. Yeah. You've got, so I get all of that. I just don't know if I needed 18 things to tell me that this is not Tibbs. I hope it's not Tibbs. I hope it's not Tibbs. Now, Glenn did have an interesting comment, I believe, when asked by Alan Horton about the hire, saying, this process this time is not unique to myself. It's a process that I've used in my other businesses. This process also gave Gerson a chance to meet our staff and see our culture. And then Gerson talked about the fact that he got to talk to, and this was another bang, bang, bang on top of our heads. I got to talk to the basketball operations, but I also talked to Cheryl Reeve of the Lynx, and I also talked to our business side, which, of course, Tibbs didn't care about that.
Right.
All right. Forgive me, though, again, if I'm a little bit skeptical, and we wait and see here, because, of course, the David Kahn hire, Manny Hill, came through a process when Glenn did use his process.
Mm-hmm.
And
he asked David Stern to help
yeah,
him.
That had nothing to do. And before we get too obsessed with Tibbs coming via a consulting firm, let's keep in mind, Corn Ferry did work for two business entities, sports business entities, very close to each other in downtown. Because it was Corn Ferry who the Pollads retained to help them find Derek Falvey, who right now looks like a very good hire. Mm-hmm. So you can't just say that this is all Corn Ferry's fault. Corn Ferry reached out to Tibbs and served as a facilitator in that. But this is still very much a wait and see. But if Glenn has some process that he hadn't used yet, and he used now, I guess my question is, why wait so long? The first question.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it comes back to, I hope it works. Third question that I would like to know, and this is because I think Mackie, I know me, I think you, the day that Tibbs was hired in what would have been April of 2016, all assumed, was this is going to be great. You got Tibbs. Look at the bull success, right?
Mm-hmm.
The third question that I would really like to hash out, not just through Rosas, but also people who were there or know about it, is a very simple one. What happened in Dallas?
Yeah.
Much trouble do we all get in as sports fans by making assumptions? Oh, Cuban's crazy and the Mavericks are. And it has come to light in recent months that I do believe that the Mavericks front office has had real problems. But I would like to know, how did you take that job, start that job, and then decide it's a bad job? Or did people around you start to say, there's some problems? I don't know. But yeah, it's a legitimate question,
sure.
And it goes back to my assumption that Tibbs was going to be fantastic, and as you saw that unfold, you said, ooh, I was wrong here.
Yeah, and I think you always have to wonder, because it's very easy to sell yourself and to say, okay, this is what I want to do, and as of right now, like, I'm a believer in this guy, that everything sounds good. But to your point, everything sounded fairly good with Tom Thibodeau 3 years ago. And then he made the trade for Jimmy Butler a year later, and then everything was great and everything. And then the rest is history.
Amen.
And so to your point, like, I want to know what happened in Dallas too. From what I gather is that he got to Dallas in 2013, I think it was. And basically the job was not what he initially thought it was going to be, because he was hired to be the general manager, I guess. And then I guess maybe he didn't have as much power or control as he thought he was initially getting. And then that's why he ended up departing and going back to Houston. But what I want to know is, what are those, you know, what happened in those conversations? How did that message and that connection that you had with Dallas, how did that get dislodged in some way?
And not just from him, too. I would like to know the background. But I think all of these things become important because the assumption has to be that the Wolves have thoroughly vetted this entire process, but I've made assumptions before and been completely wrong. You know, the one thing, I will tell you the one red flag that I see right now, and it has nothing to do with basketball, but the one red flag I see, and I've seen this in sports before, is when your desire is to find the polar opposite of the guy that you previously employed, sometimes that can blind you from very important questions regarding the strategy of that sport, if that makes sense. They clearly were after anybody that didn't resemble Tibbs at all. And yes, Tibbs, basketball-wise, Tibbs is off his rocker. I totally get that. But what we have to understand is you also want somebody who basketball-wise is going to be very good and diligent. And Tibbs was cast ultimately in the wrong job, absolutely. Maybe two wrong jobs, but one for sure. But it is interesting when you spend an entire, what, half-hour press conference or more?
About,
half-hour, basically?
Basically, yeah.
It is interesting when you spend that entire time trying to tell the public, essentially, more so than us, the public, this guy is not Tibbs. This guy has two kids, and damn it, if it takes whatever it takes, those children are going to be on his lap before this press conference is done. And if the little boy hums in the mic, it's even better. You know, it's stuff like that.
Yeah, but this is basically, I mean, you've talked about this several times, about when in sports, we've seen the Vikings do this a million times, right? Like, one guy gets fired, you go and hire the opposite.
It's Tice to Childress.
Yeah, it's Tice to Childress. It's Childress to Leslie.
Yes.
It's Leslie to Zim.
Football is 1,000% that.
Yeah.
Professional football, as we are always going to find. But I think in the case of Tibbs, you know, Tibbs got here. The Bulls' stint certainly looked good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looked fantastic. And I think Glenn said, we got a basketball guy here, and this is what we need. And then
he's going to bring toughness, and our team needs to toughen up.
And they didn't play nice. Yeah. Tibbs just didn't play nice. He didn't care about Glenn's dinners.
Yep.
He didn't care about, you know, Glenn. Glenn truly loves showing up at Target Center and being able to go in the coach's office and be, here's our game plan tonight. And Tibbs is like, why would I tell you? I don't care if you know or not.
Tibbs went into his office and shut the door, and that was it.
Exactly right. Break time?
Yeah, let's take a break. Maybe take a call or two. We've got people calling in as
okay.
well.
Okay, 651-646-8255. Come back and take some calls. Also, Gerson did talk about the status of Ryan Saunders and Scott Layden. We will get to that. Score North on 1500. It is a special edition of Raised by Wolves.
Also, you know, to the Houston Rockets, I spent a great part of my career with that organization, both growing up as a fan and as an impactful part of what that organization is about. Was fortunate to work with two great owners in Leslie Alexander and Tillman and Patrick and the Fertitta family, but a lot of great basketball people who have formed me, starting with Rudy Tomjanovich, Carol Dawson, Dennis Lindsay, guys like Daryl Morey. And countless coaches that to this day I consider as friends.
Raised by Wolves, all new Score North. That, of course, was now Gerson Rosas, the new president of basketball operations, introduced this morning by the Timberwolves at Target Center. His press conference, I guess, with side sessions with the media continues, at which they are probably trying to dive down and to find out much more. Whether he's been Father of the Year twice or three times in his life. All right. Gerson Rosas was asked by Alan Horton, I believe, who did ask questions, the play-by-play voice on radio for the Wolves, about the status, Manny Hill, of Ryan Saunders and GM Scott Layden, and said this: I'm doing my due diligence. I think Ryan and Scott have done a commendable job. That's a major objective we want to address sooner rather than later. Later in the press conference, Gerson Rosas said there's going to be tangible change and this market is going to feel it. I believe part two of that quote, there's going to be tangible change and this market is going to feel it, I think was about his vision for where this franchise is going to go as far as on the court with wins, playoff appearances, and playoff victories. I think the way I read that personally, there's going to be tangible change and this market is going to feel it, is also very much whether Rosas would admit to this or not right now, his feeling on the immediate future of this team and the changes that are coming. It is interesting that he did not assure Ryan of a thing. I think Layden's a non-factor here. Mm-hmm. I think he'll stick around or he won't
I think they'll reassign him
somewhere. I think this is Glenn has to write Scott a big check at some point, and he's already writing Tibbs a big check. And mm-hmm. so for Glenn, it's a pain in the posterior. I don't think it's a big deal there. Ryan is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And my guess is that at the very least, there would be conversations about Ryan if they go outside and hire a different coach, definitely staying on the coaching staff, which at Ryan's age would not be the worst thing. It might be a good idea. But I just thought that second part of that quote, there's going to be tangible change and the market is going to feel it, was very interesting because Rosas to me is probably trying to sell you on, well, we're going to change things and be successful. But to get to that point of success on the court, there have to be some changes off the court as well. Mm-hmm. Wiggins, coaching possibly. This franchise, the interesting thing now is in the last, what, Falvey and LaVine were hired, was it, it was after that disastrous, was it 2015 Twins season?
16. Yep.
But the point being now is for the first time in forever, the two tenants of that side of downtown now are going to be on the precipice of becoming the most forward-thinking franchises in their leagues. Mm-hmm. And you think about how long that was not the case. Yeah. And so whether he wants to do it or not, Rosas is going to have to, he's going to identify very quickly that there have to be significant alterations made here.
And I think the other part of it too, Judd, is I think that the fans and the season ticket holders, the people that show up to Target Center every, you know, people that show up to Target Center 41 times a year, and the people that invest their time watching this team play, you know, 82 times a year, I think those people are going to have to realize that this is probably going to take some time to really get a sense of, you know, if this is working, if this is going in the right direction. It's going to take a couple of years, I think, because I don't think people understand, like, the magnitude of the financial situation that they're in that they can't.
They're at the cap right now.
They're over it, I think.
Well, their core roster of guys that they're paying puts them at the cap exactly.
Yep.
But does T get traded now? And how long does this process, to what you're saying, Manny, how long does it take?
Yeah.
And you know, he's going to, with Andrew, what's he going to do with him?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to try and trade him? If he does, he's going to have to make a trade that involves
probably first round
assets pick of some sort mm-hmm. to trade him. But ultimately, that might be the smart move. So yeah, this is going to take some time, and it's going to be necessary. But there is definitely so here's where worlds collide to me. Here's where Glenn's worlds collide. Glenn Taylor is a very successful businessman in life who has not had success in sports for the most part with the Wolves. Glenn loves the family thing, right?
Yep.
He loves the family attitude. He loves the, it almost seems like the Ma and Pa sports basketball shop. But that's gone now.
Yeah.
And so no matter how good of guy Gerson Rosas might be, no matter how great a dad he might be, business-wise, from a basketball standpoint, he's going to have to do things that Glenn probably says, really? And he says, absolutely, Glenn. Now, where Tibbs, so for those who come back now and say, what's the difference then with Tibbs? It's very simple. Tibbs had no time for people. And from Ethan Casson's standpoint, and Ethan is the president of the team from a business standpoint, mm-hmm. the important thing here to keep in mind is Rosas is very likely to be very business friendly. So he will probably go to season ticket holder events. Hell, he might call 50 people who have dropped their seats personally and say, here's why you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Tibbs would never do that. So if you're Casson, you don't care. You're like, that's great. But I think Glenn's feeling about basketball being family goes deeper than that. And from a basketball standpoint, this front office is going to need to do one thing, and it's probably going to have to do it a few times. And I think for Glenn, it's going to be tough to see, and that's it's going to have to hurt feelings. It's going to have to make decisions that stink for Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts, I'm going to tell you right where that starts, Ryan Saunders.
Yeah.
If this guy doesn't think that Ryan's the guy, he can't hire him. And he's going to have to tell Taylor and Ethan Kasten and all those guys, hey, look, I'll keep him around. I like him. And we all love Flip. But that can't have anything to do with the ultimate decision. Now, to circle back to how we started this show, if Kat comes in and says, gentlemen, this is absolutely make or break, then you have to think about that.
Right.
But in this taking some time to get it right, Manny, this also circles back to the fact that Glenn's going to have to see things that Glenn probably does not like, at times might not approve of, and that's just too bad.
Yeah, and I think one the other thing, too, is when, because I've always felt this way about Glenn Taylor in that he's made tough decisions in the past in terms of letting people go, but it's always sort of felt like you probably waited too long to make that decision. And then it ended up, you know, if you would have made that decision sooner, then maybe things would have turned out differently. You know, he probably kept Kevin McHale around and let him run the basketball ops for a few years
and
too long.
And he trusted him to fire Flip, which ultimately was a terrible mistake,
right.
And then to fire Dwayne Casey, which was probably just as stupid.
Right. And then, you know, David Kahn was probably employed a year or two too long. You know what I mean?
Wow, you landed on this. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, that, yeah. I mean, he was employed
that was
four,
just
year, in, 4 years too
that
long.
That was just incompetence at its highest level, what that was.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the thing that I think now that with Rosas in place, I get the sense that Rosas is a guy that is going to look to make decisions when they need to be made at the right possible time. And to your point, he's going to have to be able to convince Glenn that, hey, we need to make this decision and we didn't make it now. And we can't be worried about hurting feelings and that sort of thing. And I think in the case of Ryan Saunders, I'm all in on, you know, bringing Ryan in, letting him have the coaching job, evaluating and everything. But if it doesn't go well, to your point, if it doesn't go well,
yeah,
Rosas needs to be the one to make that decision and say, hey, we need to make a change here. And Glenn's got to let him do it. If that's the case.
And this really needs to circle back to, I think Glenn had it sort of right, but the wrong guy by that time. The second part of McHale, where I think he sort of, I don't know if he lost interest, but he definitely was not the same executive that he had been in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea to fire Flip was fine. It was just a bad idea. But Kevin, I don't know, the detachment there was incredibly high. But Glenn allowing his chief basketball guy to do that was fine. The problem was he was, by that point, employing the wrong chief basketball guy.
Mm-hmm.
So if he goes back to that, and Gerson is as competent as, I guess, Wolves fans hope he might be, then it's probably fine. But, you know, this is what, 15 years after the fact from that, at least, or mm-hmm. so, or more than that? So what you have to have is Glenn can't be offended and or hurt and or think to himself, this isn't right. I didn't sign up for this. If this guy's doing his job, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the problem with Tibbs. And for Glenn to say that I used some of my business practices to hire this guy that I hadn't used, I'm curious, does that mean that you've never used those practices, which, by the way, to me makes no sense if you haven't.
It's like, Glenn, you've owned this team for 25 years.
Yeah. And you've
and
employed.
You're doing this just now?
And this is president of basketball operations, what, Manny?
McHale.
McHale basically had that job, right?
Yeah. McHale, then Kahn, then Flip, and then Tibbs. Yeah. So this would be
five?
Pobo number five.
Pobo five in how many years, too?
In 25 years.
Okay. So if you have this right this time, the most important person is, or the most important equation is, do you have the right person finally? And can you get that person to a point where they are allowed to completely do their job?
Mm-hmm.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
What did the Nuggets do that got them on track so quickly? Because I look at the Nuggets, I look at the Nuggets and Avs, and I say, why is that not us?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Avs, I'm a hockey guy, so I sort of know.
Yeah.
But what have the Nuggets done that, because the hurt there was, I don't know how brief or how long, but boy, are they where you would like to be right now if you're a Wolves fan.
the Nuggets have done a couple of things really, really well. Number one, they haven't signed anybody to any really like bad kind. There's no Wiggins like contract on that roster right now. You've got a couple expensive players. I mean, Paul Millsap is on the twilight side of 30 and he's making $30+ million a year, but he's a good player and he's productive for them. So you can kind of stomach that. He's probably overpaid right now, but he's productive for them. So you can live with that. And I think they have a team option on them. They can get out of that contract after the season. But the other thing is, you look at the Nuggets, Judd, their best player is a second-round pick. Jokic is a second-round pick.
Yes. And this is something the Wolves have never really done.
No. The Nuggets have done a terrific job of managing their cap, not crippling themselves financially, which is what Tibbs and the Wolves did over the last couple of years. And a bigger thing that they've done that the Wolves have done a terrible job of doing is they have developed the hell out of players. Gary Harris, Will Barton, this Malik Beasley kid.
And that's what Gerson should have the inside track to do.
Yeah, and these are guys, Judd, that were mid to late first round picks. Now, Jamal Murray, who's one of the really good players, played a terrific game last night against Portland. Now, he was a lottery pick, a couple of picks after Chris Dunn, I think. Nice job, Tibbs. Thank you.
Yeah, I saw Mackey's tweet about that last night.
But, you know, now he was a lottery pick, but a majority of their players, Judd, were mid to late first round picks, and they've just developed them. They've put in a method of operation. They've got everybody on the same page in that organization, and they have developed the hell out of their players. That's why the Nuggets are as good as they are right now. That's how they've gone from being on the doorstep of the playoffs, battling it out with the Wolves on the last night of the season last year.
Yes.
And then now they're the number two seed in the Western Conference. That's how they've gotten there.
All right.
They've stayed out of bad contracts, and they've developed their young players. Two things that the Wolves have done a terrible job of.
Let's take a break. Another hour of Raised by Wolves, and then Purple Daily right here on Score North. Let's go to our Timberwolves reporter now. You can find his fine work at scorenorth.com, and he will actually join me at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Mackey and Rami are off, but Danny Cunningham is always working. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Like you said, always working, Judd. Never taking time off.
So I got a question just to start with. When did we go to the made-for-TV press conference?
So the made-for-TV press conference is typically a thing that's done here. We got some time with Gerson and Ethan Kasson after in a side session that obviously is not televised, where we get to ask questions.
Those are the answers. Those are the answers I wanted, Danny Cunningham.
Well, those are the ones that you have to go to scorenorth.com to find later today when I write about it. Come on, that's what this is.
Very well
played, Danny.
Yes. So what was your takeaway? Let's start with the after TV press conference. What was your takeaway from Gerson Rosas' answers to the questions that were asked by the mainstream media folks?
So he's going to be someone that I think the thing that stood out to me is we're going to question everything. We're going to question the norm. We're going to be creative about ways that work. And that was the thing that stuck out to me the most, because that's not how things have been done here. It's been very traditional, and that hasn't worked out well for them. We're going to see a change. He talked about how there's going to be a tangible change in this organization by time basketball is being played next October at Target Center. So those were my two main takeaways, but the challenging the norm and trying to be creative, because he comes from a place in Houston where that's exactly what they were. They challenged the norm. They were not a normal organization. We're a very creative one, and it's been successful for them in ways that the Wolves haven't experienced. And another thing that he brought up that was really interesting to me is that he's been through something like this before. 3 years ago, the Rockets were the number two seed. It was James Harden and Dwight Howard. And then they got rid of Dwight Howard. They went 41-41. And in the years since, they've been Western Conference Finals teams. They've been a championship contender. So he's rebuilt, or been part of a rebuild that took place in a very similar capacity as the Wolves will have to, because they weren't a team with lottery picks. They weren't a team with cap room. They had to be creative about the rebuild, and that's exactly what the Wolves have to be.
So where does, from the Wolves' standpoint, Danny, where does challenging the norm sort of take them?
Challenging the norm is going to change the style of play because that's been the norm here. And I don't know if it's challenging the norm of basketball so much as challenging the norms of what the Timberwolves have been as an organization, because I think that those are two different things. I think that they're going to have to change the style of play and they're going to challenge the way that they've played. He brought up Karl Anthony Towns a number of times as being a superstar caliber player and someone he's really excited to work with. And he's going to maybe challenge the norm of the way that a big man in the NBA plays. And we know that Karl kind of does that already with his 3-point shot, shooting 40% from deep. But what else can be done there? And you have to push your boundaries as far as you can. And I think that he's got that in mind. He's got a plan for it. And challenging the norm of how good Andrew Wiggins is or can be, because he brought him up as someone who is immensely talented and has that high-end talent but just hasn't put it together. And he said it's on the organization to figure it out. It's not all on Andrew. So maybe he's the guy that can change that too, because that's been a negative norm here, and you have to question that and challenge it too.
Danny, you and I, we've talked on Raised by Wolves and Show of Hands several times, you know, over the last week about, you know, when the news broke that Gerson Rosas was going to take over, you know, what are they going to do with Andrew Wiggins? What is going to be different about Andrew Wiggins going forward? We both know that, you know, and I think everybody kind of has the idea that moving Andrew Wiggins is going to be a very, very difficult task. You're going to have to attach some sort of asset to be able to move on from the contract. And right now, considering where this team is financially, I mean, they need all the assets they can get. So now what's your best guess on what the plan for Andrew Wiggins is going to be now that, you know, we kind of have the idea that he's going to be here for at least the foreseeable future?
I think the plan is if someone has an offer, you're going to listen. That's how it's going to be on every single player.
Yep.
Maybe not on Karl, but probably on every single player. Other than that, the plan is going to be try to force this to make it work. There's got to be a way to make someone that has that much natural ability good at basketball. And their plan is going to be, how are we going to make that happen? What can we do to change his success on the floor? Because he hasn't had it as a professional athlete, but they're hoping that it's still somewhere in there and that they can get it out of there. And he does have experience with players that have really transformed their roles. I know obviously James Harden is a much better player than Andrew Wiggins, but James Harden's role has changed quite a bit, and he didn't develop into the MVP caliber player that he is until he was 28 or 29. Obviously he was much better prior to them than Andrew has been, but he changed drastically and became twice the player he was. Just because that jump was from really good to exceptionally great doesn't mean that Andrew can't go from terrible to being a serviceable NBA player. Now, I don't think he'll ever live up to that contract, but he can still be a much better fit and much better player on the court for the Wolves than he has been.
What's your best guess on where Gerson is at in terms of Ryan Saunders and Scott Layden too? I mean, that's something else we've talked about on the podcast too, but you know, with Ryan sort of being in this mix in some way, shape or form, you know, what's your best guess on where Gerson is at with him?
I think that Gerson he'll be meeting with Ryan today or tomorrow and starting to map out a plan. I don't know how much that plan involves Ryan, truthfully. It could not. He was very noncommittal on both Ryan's job and Scott's job. He did commend them for the job that they have done, taking over in a very difficult situation, which I think that they both did admirable jobs for the most part, but he was noncommittal on Ryan's future. He did not come out and say that Ryan's going to be the coach of this team moving forward, which is something that I didn't necessarily expect to happen, but I would not have been the least bit surprised if it did happen. So I do think that nothing's set in stone. Ryan very much could be the coach of the Wolves moving forward, but at this point it also wouldn't surprise me if he's not, because Gerson does have total control. He's got the ability to hire whoever he wants, and he talked about it being a very important hire. Both the coach and the GM are things that they have to knock out of the park. If they don't have an opportunity to screw it up because they've handcuffed themselves so badly, they have to get it right on the first try.
Give me a coach or two who's out there right now who you think would be a good fit for the direction Danny Cunningham, this franchise, is going.
Believe it or not, I think Ryan is a good fit for the direction that this franchise is going. I think that he's a young guy that does believe in analytics. I think there are a couple other people. I think Jordy Fernandez is someone that we've seen brought up with the the Cleveland Cavaliers job opening. He's interviewed there. Ettore Messina with the San Antonio Spurs is another guy that has interviewed for a few jobs. He's supposed to interview in Cleveland. He's interviewed in the past in Charlotte, and I believe Orlando and Milwaukee too. So there are probably 5 or 10 names of coaches that have been through this interview process where they have some player development background. And I think that that's something that's probably important right now, because you have to find a way to maximize your players that you have, because you have to either do that or be extremely creative in the way that you acquire new talent. And I think that the Wolves are going to do the best of their ability to do both of those things.
At what point during the televised portion of today's presser did you pick up on the fact that it was very important for the Wolves to get across the fact that these are not Tibbs' Wolves now, that these are the kinder, gentler, family-friendly, Glenn Taylor-hugging Wolves?
I don't think it was planned, but when Gerson's twin 3-year-old son and daughter got up to the stage, that was something that never would have happened with Tom Thibodeau.
You don't think the small children would have run up to Tibbs and gotten on Tibbs' laps?
I think they
he was Santa Claus.
Would have been, do you think they would have been more terrified of Tibbs or of the giant Jack Lynx statue inside Target Center?
Oh, it would be close. Probably Tibbs 1, Jack Lynx 2.
It's close, though. You have to think about it. You don't have a clear... There's no clear-cut answer.
Call me a cynic. I know Danny Cunningham, but I'm going
you
with...
never.
But I'm going with that was planned. I think everything about the TV portion was.
I don't know if you can have that planned for three-year-olds.
Okay, well...
I'm not sure. I think maybe you're right, but...
Let's go through it. Daddy's at the podium. Kids are on, like, Mom's lap, right?
Yes, in the chair next to her.
Yeah, exactly. Mom gives kids the freedom to go see Daddy. You think kids are going to pass it up?
I don't know. I don't know that
the adults plan this, like not that. The kids.
I don't know if it was planned. I think that 100%. maybe kids like to be around microphones, Judd.
Who doesn't?
I mean, we do, obviously.
Who doesn't?
So Danny, with what do you think is the first thing or the next thing that Gerson's going to do now? I would think finding his staff, putting together, you know, his staff and everything has to be the next thing that's in order for him, right?
Yeah, I think that's it. And I asked him that in the side session after the made-for-TV press conference. And I asked him, aside from just Ryan and Scott, what's the whole process like? Because you have to – and he brought up – kind of staffing it like an NFL staff, where you have a head coach that's in charge of everything. You have a defensive coordinator, an offensive coordinator, a player development coordinator, things like that. And it was a real, I don't know if it's a different approach than what goes on in the NBA, but it was termed differently than the way that the NBA coaching staffs are typically put together. So I think that the coaching staff in the front office, he's going to have to figure out who he can trust to help him make decisions, because no leader of an organization makes these decisions by themselves all the time. So he's going to have to find his right-hand man. Whether that's Scott or somebody else, I don't know. But I think that that's probably a very vital thing to figure out. And I think you have to figure out who the head coach is and work with that person to put together a staff that's going to help you get to where you want to go. Because he mentioned many times, Glenn Taylor wants to bring a championship to Minnesota. And obviously that hasn't happened with this organization ever. So they're going to have to try things different ways. And if this is what works, then he'll be in good hands.
Because Tibbs was such a lockdown guy and so basically paranoid, how far behind the times are the Wolves right now from an executive front office perspective? Because we've seen in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, the Twins have brought in a ton of people. They don't announce them, but they are important. And so how far behind are the Wolves now because Tibbs ran what amounted to such a tight ship?
Because it is such a tight ship here, I think that's a little bit difficult of a question to answer, because we don't know necessarily how the front office is structured at the moment. We have to kind of figure that out. I do expect, whether or not Scott Layden stays on, I do expect there to be a lot of new members of that front office to help Garrison. I think that that's going to be something that changes. If Scott's around for it, fine. But if he's not, then that just opens up more room for change, which is obviously what the Wolves needed, because what's been going on at Target Center for the last 30 years hasn't worked.
So We're about, what, a little over a week away from the draft lottery, a time that you and I are
8 days,
both,
Manny Hill, 8 days.
I am chomping at the bit. I wish it was like tonight. I mean, I just want to know where this team is going to pick. But do you expect
they'll
them?
Drop, man. I can tell you that right now. You can just ask me.
But do you expect them to make, do you expect Gerson Rosas to make anything significant done between now and then? I mean, it's only 8 days, but do you expect any sort of big change or big announcement between now and the draft lottery?
I think that we will have more clarity on Ryan Saunders' future and Scott Layden's future between now and then, because those are important. He brought up that date as something that's important to have people in place by. Now, I don't know if it will be them, but I expect us to have clarity on whether or not they will be part of the future by the draft lottery on May 14th.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, Danny.
Anything for you guys.
Talk to you soon. Danny Cunningham does a great job covering the Wolves for us. Check out his work at scorenorth.com. Be plenty of coverage going up this afternoon, answering all the questions that we probably didn't get in the televised portion of the press conference, or the one that we carried, unfortunately, today here on Score North. But there were side sessions in which Danny got a chance to talk to Gerson Rosas, the Wolves' new, as Collar calls him, Pobo, team president Ethan Kass, and owner Glenn Taylor as well.